Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today. Welcome to The Gays Are Revolting, a definitive weekly news source for contemporary gays.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
Give us a shout out on Instagram at Gays Revolting Pod, or join our Facebook group at The Gays Are Revolting.
And we've got our resident Dr. George joining us in a few episodes. Send your questions relating to both mental and physical health via DM. And as I have just gotten back from Mardi Gras, I thought instead of doing reads this week, in the spirit of love and harmony, I'm going to say the nicest things I can about people and the things that I love about you the most. So first of all, I'll start by saying, unfortunately, Kyle's not here, but I would like to say that he's always here with an open mind and an open heart. And ready to learn about wonderful new things.
Oh, you're being serious.
Very sad. Yeah, being nice. We are joined by the lovely Mikey, who is just the most loving person and is so interested in every little detail in everybody's life. And Luke.
Hi. Yeah.
That's all I've got to say about you. How are you all?
I'm glad I got to read at least. Yes. I don't like the mushy stuff.
I missed you. I haven't seen you for 2 weeks.
It's been weird without you here.
I know. I was up at Mardi Gras. I did 3 nights of granny bingo prior to Mardi Gras and then went to the parade, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it looked incredible. I feel bad.
I swamped your social medias and was posting off the Gays Revolting account like crazy.
No, but it was
absolutely fucking incredible. I got to, very kindly was invited by a friend of the podcast, Joel Creasy, who was hosting from the SBS booth, which is right on Taylor Square, right in the center of the parade. So 300,000 people around us partying on the streets. And I got to meet Jake Shears and Xena Warrior Princess and Courtney Act. And I was like meters away from Kylie Minogue while he was interviewing her. And it was just like a truly memorable life experience. It was absolutely incredible. And of course, Kyle's still there.
I was going to say, did we leave Kyle at Mardi Gras?
He is alive. We got to hang out at the after party, which again was incredible. But I will say the whole week was amazing and Mardi Gras is incredible. Yeah. But we talked a while ago about the crazy like drug laws and stuff that's happening in Sydney, and you definitely felt that like the whole week. There was such a police presence everywhere. After party, there was so many sniffer dogs running around.
Oh my God.
They were like going up to everybody that was anywhere near the after, like trying to get into the after party. Yeah. Two friends of mine got arrested. They had stuff inside them. They'd hidden them inside them and still got caught and arrested and stuff. It was crazy.
What about glitter dogs?
No, they're still... Kyle was wearing glitter, but he said it was biodegradable, but that shit did not look biodegradable.
Lies. It did. Lies, you tell.
But I'm sure that he took like a sieve into the shower afterwards to wash it off and make sure he captured it all and all that sort of stuff. How have you been? What's been news? What's been happening?
Oh, I got a new piercing.
You got a new piercing. Yeah, looking lovely.
So I got my top lip pierced, which is cute. Got it done yesterday. My mouth, yes. And I woke up this morning with a giant lip and I was like, ooh, instant fillers. This is great. This is what I'll look like. And it looked ridiculous. I was like, I'm never getting fillers. There's no point.
Kylie Jenner.
Yeah, she's coming for your brand, girl.
And Luke, has anything happened in your life? No. Mundane as usual.
Just this. I am actually excited. I'm sure you guys saw it on social media, but Straight Ally Best Mate. JB has launched his first music video for his album, I helped draw little pictures for it, and they blindfolded me, which is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
But he's launching his album on vinyl on March 16th.
On vinyl? That's
cool. It's going to be a cool event. He's dressing up in drag.
Love it.
To perform, and...
Does he need any help with his makeup? Because... you know.
He's going to need a lot of help. Yeah.
Have you seen him?
I can help a brother out.
But I think if anyone wants to truck along and dress up, it's all inclusive. It's going to be a fun night. It's at the Merry Creek Tavern in Northcote.
Cute.
So, right. Super cute Northside venue. Yes. Get your vegan snacks ready.
Before we get started, I have to say I met so many wonderful, lovely people at Mardi Gras, yeah, who said really nice things about our podcast, and unfortunately I was off my face for most of the week and I can't remember a lot of their names, but there was a really lovely guy called Lee who I met at the after party who was so nice, yeah, and said so many lovely things. So hi Lee, and hi everyone else that said hi, and sorry I can't remember your names. So I want to do a little bit of a content warning for this first topic that we're talking about. It does talk about sexual abuse of, mm-hmm, children within the church. It's a bit of a bittersweet topic talking about it now. Obviously, the stuff that happened is awful, but for, yeah, me, I'm fucking thrilled because we can finally talk about the fact that Cardinal George Pell, or hopefully soon to be no longer Cardinal, yes, George Pell, has been convicted of abusing two boys and found guilty of abusing two boys in the 90s. In a nutshell, for anyone that's not aware, or that would be hard to not be aware, Cardinal George Pell started out as a priest decades ago in, yep, rural Victoria, studied in Rome, all that sort, mm-hmm, of thing, came back, was quickly moved up through the ranks in the Catholic Church, mm-hmm, around very Australia, good, and then was moved over to Rome and became the treasurer of the Vatican, which is considered to be the third most important role in the Vatican. So,
oh, wow,
Pope, really? Oh, sorry, fourth. So there's the Pope, two other people, then him. He is the highest person in the Catholic Church to ever be found guilty of sexual misconduct. And this comes after a string of things, a lot of which, mm, we didn't know until recently, because he was so involved in covering up other people's, yeah, misconduct within the church as well as his own. A lot of stuff's only coming out now that we're finding out that he was, mm, actually investigated for, but was never made public, or he was, mm, never found guilty of. The reason I want to talk about on this show is that he was one of the major voices in the marriage equality debate and has been on all topics relating to the LGBTI community for the many decades that he has been serving for the Catholic Church. And then to turn out that he has been doing this shit is pretty fucked, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's been against almost sex in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very vocal against, he's very anti-abortion, mm-hmm, yeah, divorce, sex outside of marriage, all, yeah, that sort of stuff. But he famously said at a talk for school kids that homosexuality was a greater health risk than smoking.
Than smoking, yeah, yeah.
Which is then pretty disgusting.
About a homosexual that smokes.
Me, I'm his worst nightmare.
It's such a tricky topic to discuss, mm, because seeing it all pop up in your news feed and everyone chipping in their hot takes on, mm, the subject as well, and even trying to discuss it in an entertaining way,
yeah,
feels really gross to me in some aspects.
Yeah.
Because I think while this is a hot topic at the moment, it skims over the fact that a lot of these events date back to the 90s and, you know,
70s, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Earlier.
Yeah.
And those
ripples. I think it's just been really revealed that he was being investigated in 1962 for an offense, yeah, that happened at a school camp on Phillip Island. So this has been going for decades and decades, yeah, and decades, yeah.
And those ripples still exist.
Yeah.
So I have friends and acquaintances that I know that suffered abuse back in the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they now have their own families. They're, mm-hmm, in their late 50s. But the damage done to them is affecting them on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Bittersweet, I think, is the right word, where you can go, great, we've finally done the unthinkable for,
yeah,
a lot of people.
I wouldn't say it's entertaining, yeah, but I would, yeah, say for a lot of people in Australia, it is a huge relief and a celebration that he's finally been found guilty of all this sort of stuff. I personally, yeah, have, mm, someone that is incredibly close to me who was a victim of abuse by someone in the Catholic Church, mm, and Cardinal Pell was personally involved in the covering up and the shutting down of that being investigated. So for me and some lots of people very close to me, it's, mm, entirely pure joy that he has now been, yeah, found guilty,
mm,
for at least some of the stuff that he's been involved in. And I truly believe that as time goes by, more cases will be reopened or people will come forward,
well, yeah, that's
and
it,
we'll be finding out that more things have happened.
Yeah, I really hope it's the start of some actual repercussions,
yeah,
for the actions of people that are part of institutions, as opposed to a blip that we all kind of obsess, yeah, about.
No, I think this is the start of something very big.
Yeah,
I totally
hope so. Some of the really gross things about this, I think, has come from the defense as well.
Just been ridiculous. Mm. Two of the clerics at the church that he was practicing at were blaming homosexuality for the reason why these things were happening, not actually blaming it on
the individual
yeah. themselves, and also the abuse of power that these people are being given, and saying that it was the homosexual agenda is why it's caused all of this, and our push for equality. For centuries, this has been happening,
absolutely,
and it's been
yeah.
covered up. And it's only now that we live in an age of social media that it's all coming out, and that you can't hide these things anymore.
There are documented cases of high up members in the Catholic Church abusing young boys and girls and women and nuns and you know, all sorts of people dating back literally thousands of years. The LGBTI rights movement didn't really properly start until, I mean, you could sort of say the 50s, but really, you know, sort of the 60s, 70s. So, you know, there's hundreds of years between the start of the Catholic Church doing this fucked up stuff and the LGBTI rights movement. So it's a completely moot point, if you ask me.
Yeah. The thing that surprises me about this whole scenario is, if I was ever to commit like some sort of major crime, the first thought in my head would be to become an influential member of the Catholic Church, because the people that will support you and continue to support you even after conviction has been really shocking. You've seen people that...
This is the fucked thing, isn't it?
Yeah, people still making statements saying, you know, it doesn't change their opinion of him. He's a good man.
They're still denying.
And when we say people, we're talking two former prime ministers.
Two former prime ministers.
We're not talking about prime ministers from the 60s. We're talking about recent. John Howard and Tony Abbott, two very recent prime ministers. Lyle Shelton as well, of course, who was also a major opponent to the marriage equality movement.
Yeah.
Miranda Devine and Andrew Bolt.
Corey Bernardi as well.
People that are still very, very active in journalism and politics that are still supporting him even after he's been found guilty.
Yeah.
Exciting seems like an awful word to say, but it is exciting that we are finally talking about these kinds of people.
Yeah.
Because Western laws, Western government is based on Christian beliefs, and it's so entwined with the Vatican and with different Christian religions. So for someone so high up in the Catholic Church to be finally found guilty of something that they are guilty of is actually a really great thing. It means we are properly separating church and state, and we're not letting people get away with it, which he has been. He was investigated, and we did find out prior to this case that he was covering things up. He was aware of all the abuse that was happening in Ballarat, and he said he didn't feel like it was his place to say anything. He didn't know enough about it, even though he was in charge of all these priests in Ballarat that were...
Which is absolute crap. Like, no, how did you not know about
that? I don't
that
care
stuff.
If you're a fucking hairdresser.
Absolutely.
As you are. Like, if you know found out that shit's going on, you go to a police station and you say
you
something.
Report
if you don't know how to,
you're the person that's been entrusted to look after everyone else below you, and you're the one allowing all of these things to happen. Like, it's just so mind blowing.
Absolutely,
There's a real hypocrisy when it comes to, I think, a lot of these really ideological arguments against LGBT people, and it frustrates me the most is, you know, the shifting of goalposts when it comes to their ideals and their arguments. And you see it all the time in politics. They will spout on and on about statistics or science until science or statistics prove them wrong.
Yeah.
And then it switches to faith. This isn't a science issue. This is about faith.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the unfortunate people still supporting George Pell at the moment are doing that same shifting of goalposts. You know, the thing of saying, well, it's not about sexual abuse, it's about the homosexual agenda, or even his defense attorney using language like it was just a vanilla assault, and it's
that's a hard one, because that's what a lawyer does, and I know that that's been picked out of this case as a separate thing, but it is still very alarming to see a lawyer saying it was just a vanilla offense.
Yeah, and to see it, I think, posted about so openly. I think a lot of the articles I've read about it is, this is generally what it's like in court. It's just behind closed doors.
Mm.
I think it's also important to be mindful of the impact that news stories and coverage has on other survivors of abuse.
Absolutely.
People listening to this show even.
I do hope that for a lot of them it does, whether it may not, you know, give them the courage to want to go and talk to people about it. They might still not have the confidence to talk about their own experience, but I hope that it gives them some satisfaction that something is now being done finally after decades and decades of investigations that were shut down by the church and quite often by Pell himself, which is actually why he worked his way up in the Vatican, is because he was so instrumental in shutting down all of these things that would have damaged the Catholic Church otherwise.
It's crazy. I find it really interesting that Australia was not that big on George Pell, but the church was
massive.
Yeah.
You know, his views were so extreme and so doggedly outdated that
a lot of Catholic Australians were not big fans of him.
No, but the Vatican
loved him.
All about
loved him. Yeah. Treasury straight away. Yeah. And for me, that's crazy too, because when you're in like a school club, treasury is like the fake job that you give to the yeah. kid, other than like timekeeper or whatever. So for that to be like the
he was
important.
Good at his job, and his job was to cover this shit up, and that's fucked.
Mm.
I wonder what, I mean, look, to me, and I've said this before on the podcast, I think that there is something unnatural about suppressing someone's sexuality.
Absolutely.
And I think that it often comes out in ways of abuse, whether it is children or, you know, people of the parish, in their parish, or nuns or whatever. An irregularly high number, or disproportionately high number, of abuse by Catholic priests because they are suppressing their sexuality. And I think the reason for a lot of it being gay abuse is because a lot of them that grow up in very Christian households are told they can't be gay, and they think, well, if I can't act out my sexuality, then I'll go into the church and be celibate. But I don't think that forced celibacy on any human being is healthy. So I wonder at what point does the government sort of step in and go, guys, we're going to have to do something about this. Like, you can't do this anymore.
Because that's the thing. Like, does the government have a right to step into a church? Like, what is the boundaries there with church?
If you ask me,
government?
If the children are being abused, yes.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I hope this starts a much bigger investigation into a lot of previous cases. And should the resolution be saying to them, like, you can't have a rule that says that somebody can't have sex?
If as many people were sexually assaulted by clowns.
Yes. Circuses. They wouldn't be clowns, yeah.
Circuses would be banned.
Yeah,
you know, or we wouldn't send our kids there. Yeah. But there's historically just too many numbers stacked against this being a healthy environment for children. And we've all had that thought cross our mind when we're in the closet about celibacy. You know, it flickers through, and that makes sense to me, thinking of going that route if you're
a Christian person.
If you're a religious person and you want to stay true to your faith. But there's something about the system itself.
Yeah, they're just sort of looking out for each other, helping each other out in this basically pedophile ring.
Yeah.
Did you see that in Sydney there is a nunnery that have a plaque of George Pell up, and they have decided to keep the plaque.
Oh, really?
Which is the Australian Catholic universities all have pictures of him as well. He was very instrumental, like, in setting up a lot of the Australian Catholic unis.
I just don't understand why you would want to keep plaques and photos and stuff of him up, knowing that he has now been convicted.
This blind defense of somebody that's been convicted is really insane. And I've never seen it for another high profile person before. Like, I've never seen this. We've got former prime ministers, major journalists, major politicians, churches and universities, like, and stuff.
Why
defending
wouldn't you
this person that has
distance
been found
yourself from
absolutely
him as much as possible?
This has been fully investigated, and there are so many people coming forward saying that shit has happened.
I think it's fear. It boggles my mind that we're sitting here in 2018 or 19, whatever.
You need to drink less.
The idea that you could stand by a convicted pedophile, openly, publicly, and rationally stand behind that statements to that effect really blows my mind. Mm. But the church always reminds me of, like, the big bad from Buffy. You know how they always had, like, these overwhelming odds against them. So this to me feels really like season 3, where she kills the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
It does feel like the little guy's actually beating the big bad.
Do you think that the Catholic Church as an institution is dying? I mean, I think religion's obviously going to be around forever, but do you think the church, do you think that it's coming to an end?
I think the power that they once had is dwindling. Yeah. And it's same of a lot of these ideas where we're kind of growing with the times, but certain institutions are not. And the more power that people have, and the more choice that people have,
I think it's the
more
education that people have, to be honest.
Education and information available to people, the less power these organizations have. And if anything, we've seen the world is moving in the direction of free information.
I just can't see 3 generations from now having a church in every... Like, they're all going to be cafes and apartments.
That's
and,
it. You it's know, super the refurbished churches.
I have no problem
apartments.
With people believing in religion and believing in Jesus and believing in the Bible. That's well, it. The Bible, I'm questioned about, because we know historically that has been changed and updated a lot over time.
Times,
But I think anyone that is sticking by an institution that is defending someone like this is has got to ask themselves some pretty serious questions. Have you ever been to the Vatican?
I haven't been to the Vatican.
No, it's disgusting.
Is it?
But it is disgusting. The,
like filthy or like just...
No.
The, oh, okay. Like, I was like,
you
what?
Go through hall after hall of Fabergé eggs and golden chandeliers and multi-million dollar paintings and statues that are worth entire countries' debts.
Yeah.
And yet this is the same church that is going out to third world countries to preach the word of don't use condoms, you know, and creating all this poverty and disease and all this sort of stuff. And yet they've got all this fucking wealth that
pearls before disgusting. Swine.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So we're going to go into something a little bit lighter. What do you guys think about threesomes?
Do you like them? I can make this one as dark as the last one. Yeah.
Love them.
You love them? Yeah, all about them?
Yeah.
I was thinking about it because, like, being with Josh, we've obviously had conversations about what we want to do in the future, and we generally check out a lot of people together as well. And I asked him, I was just like, oh, well, how do you feel about, like, a threesome? Like, not saying that I want to do one right now, but would it be something that you would be open to in the future? Like, is it something that you've enjoyed in the past? And he's just like, oh, I've been in plenty of threesomes before, but now being in my first relationship, it's not something that I sort of see myself doing. And I was just like, oh, okay, cool. And he asked me and I was just like, well, look, I generally never say never to a lot of things. I'm always up for trying stuff. So who knows? Maybe in the future we will.
Well, let me know and I'll
do. We will be taking applications. No.
I lack the hand-eye coordination required for...
Oh, see, I thought you'd be bang up for a threesome.
Well, look, it hasn't stopped me from trying. But I always get so overwhelmed by the amount of work. I could never tap my head and rub my belly at the same time. So the idea of one over here and one over there...
Just like just, skiing away.
Yeah, I like go into shutdown. And I think JB told at the live show I fell asleep. In a threesome once.
Yes. Nath Valvo does a great stand-up bit where he says it's like, you know, you go to the circus and you see the guy spinning the plates.
Yeah.
With, you know, and you keep running back to that plate and back to that plate to keep everybody happy and entertained.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm no good at. It's not on my resume. Yeah.
For me, like, the more dick, the better. Like, it's so much fun. But once you start talking about it in relationship context, that's sort of different. My first threesome in a relationship was a few relationships ago. And we'd been going out for a while. My boyfriend at the time was very keen to have one.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, cool, I'll give it a shot. And we did it. And it was really, really fun. Then we didn't do it for a while. And then we did it again. And then I was sort of like, oh, let's have a break from the threesomes. But he was very keen to keep doing them. So it became more and more regular. And in my opinion, was the cause of the end of our relationship. Like, it just became the normal. Like, it was like every weekend, it was like, let's find someone to take home. And it was like, okay, we've sort of somewhat lost our intimacy. Skip to my last relationship. We only had a few threesomes, but they were really, really fun. And it never became sort of the normal. And we still had amazing sex when it was just the two of us as well.
Nice.
Yeah, I think definitely in relationships, if you're keen for it, give it a shot.
Yeah.
But lay down some rules. I should have been more open in how I was feeling about it in that one that didn't work out. And I should have said, if you want to stay, we need to stop doing this. You know, I've watched it destroy. I'm currently watching it destroy friends' relationships as well. You've just got to be very open about it. And that communication has to be ongoing. Like, yeah, cool, it might seem like a good idea at the start. If one of you decides it's not feeling that good anymore, just say you're not feeling that good before you withdraw from the relationship, I think.
Totally.
So threesomes were like faith in Buffy season 3.
We're on a Buffy thing, aren't we?
Have you ever responded to those Grindr profiles where
they've gone and had them with a couple?
Where they're just shopping for a third.
Yeah, love it.
No, that to me, I could probably indulge in because you're just like a guest star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like Seth Green.
Yeah. And they're probably thrilled. Like, Buffy. You know, you could do really shit and they're still thrilled to have you there.
Yeah. Totally. I remember once having a Grindr hookup and it was like pretty good. Mm. And then having another Grindr hookup maybe a week later or whatever, it was also all right. And then I was actually with JB's parents for some reason.
Also a Grindr hookup.
Well, yeah. They're very active on there. And I got a text from the second guy, and it basically said, if you ever want to fuck my boyfriend again, you're going to have to fuck me too.
Oh, my God. And
I hadn't realized, because I'm not that bright, that I'd gone to the same house twice in 1 week, but slept with both parts of, like, an open relationship.
Amazing. Yeah.
And so I had to explain it to JB's parents. And explain their culture to them as well, that this was a normal thing that could happen to anybody.
Yeah.
There is something kind of hot, I think, about watching the person that you're... If you're in the right frame of mind and the relationship's in the right place, there is something kind of hot about watching your boyfriend get fucked or your boyfriend fucking someone. Like,
yeah, I think it would be really hot to watch Josh get fucked by someone.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'd be down for it.
Yeah.
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 You just let me know.
I've only ever had one threesome in my whole life.
Right.
It was with one of my very first boyfriends in high school. We got together and he was sort of keen on one of our other friends before we had got together. And I was sort of keen on this other friend as well. Mm. And one night we were all just hanging out, like drinking. And we were just like joking around like, oh, wouldn't it be like so funny if we had a threesome? Just like, yeah, it'd be so funny.
That's
and
the oldest line. Yeah.
And at that point we had an older friend. It wasn't much older, but like we were 17 and he was like 5 years older than us. And he had explicitly said that he wanted to sleep with all of us. And we were just like, oh my God, how funny would it be if we took photos having a threesome and sent it to him and made him jealous? Oh. And so we did that. And I would like think back to that and be like, I was such a shit person. But that's my only like threesome ever. It was actually super awkward the whole time because they were just doing each other and I was just like, oh, where do I
I'm
get
taking
in
the photos.
You were third
wheeling. Yeah. And I was just like, this is my boyfriend, what the hell.
Gay threesomes in high school, this is why the Christian church is so scared. Like, that shit just blows my mind. In high school I was still picking my nose and reading Goosebumps.
My best friend and I were going out of Hammer and Tong.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, like free periods and like the non-fiction section in the library.
I was trying to convince someone to trade Pokemon with me.
Yeah, we were sort
Mike
of doing
is having
that.
Fucking
I had a look at his Pikachu. I am gay.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm gay. But I've lately been watching a lot of MMF porn. Male, female. So threesomes with two guys and a girl where the guys are bi and the girls... Yeah. Also into it and that sort of stuff. And it's something I'd really like to try, but I'm too nervous because I'm, you know, it's been 15 years since I had sex with a woman. But I don't really know how you go about meeting a couple that want to have.
I've always thought if I was to ever have sex with a woman, it would have to be that situation. Like I'd have to have another guy there.
It's just really hot. Like, I'll send you some links later. I've got them tagged.
Right. Some girls are really into gay porn.
Oh,
Yeah, I've got some girlfriends who are into gay porn. Yeah.
Really into it. Mm. I guess there's probably apps. Aren't there like apps for throuples, like three couples? Like Tinder or whatever.
I still can't work out Tumblr. I don't know how I'm not going to work out a new fucking dating
app.
That's it.
How do we feel about throuples? Have you ever thought about, like, would you ever be in a throuple?
I've never seen one that didn't seem utterly insufferable.
Yeah.
Really?
I definitely... Frankie Grande was in a throuple.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's, he's just annoying anyway.
Derek Barry is in a throuple.
Yeah, you're speaking annoying people, though. That's not fair.
Well, it's just like confirmation bias or whatever. You find someone annoying and you Google them and it turns out they're in a throuple.
Yeah.
Sorry to any listeners that are in a throuple.
I definitely couldn't do it. I've met people where it has worked. I've met people that have been in throuple relationships for really long periods of time and it's fine. Mm. I just definitely couldn't do it myself. I'm fine with my partner fucking someone else for like a short period of time, but if like my partners were going out to the movies and I wasn't there, I would be upset.
It's just like one too many people for me. Like I can hardly deal with my own thoughts, let alone two other people's.
Nah. And who sleeps in the middle of the bed? Like that's a shit
not
spot
me
to be in.
Nah.
Polyamory.
Yeah, see, polyamory is a different thing, which is I could see myself maybe considering that.
Is that where you have separate relationships?
You've got separate partners. Well, you could have a throuple and a separate relationship, or you could just have separate relationships. But it's where you're not cheating on the other person. You have, you're open about the fact that you're seeing other people at the same time.
Yeah, the emotional responsibility to throuples and polyamory is way too much. I barely have enough feelings to record this show.
Yeah.
Let alone to share them with more than one person.
Yeah. But I've got a lot of admiration for polyamorous people because they've identified that they are not the kind of person that is satisfied by a conventional relationship. Yeah. That's probably not an easy thing with the social constraints that we have around what a relationship should be to sort of talk about publicly. And then they've gone and found other people and they have these open discussions with people about it. So, I mean, I have a lot more admiration for someone that's polyamorous than someone that's cheating on their partner.
Yeah.
I think I'm just too selfish for
You definitely are.
Yeah. Yeah, I do respect it. There was a polyamorous relationship.
Yeah.
I think there were three or four people involved who used to come to the cafe I worked in Thornbury. And they were so chill. They brunched together. They hung out. You'd see them separately and sometimes together as a group or whatever.
Oh, so that sounds more like a quad relationship than a polyamorous relationship.
Well, they said they were poly.
Right.
Okay. So I'm just going to go by what they said. But I had a lot of respect for that because that whole concept, I freaked out third party for them.
Yeah. Like, sixth party.
I went home and had like a stress and picked a fight with myself.
Yeah.
Just based off the imagination of being a part of that. So if you are interested in a polyamorous relationship, don't hit me up.
I would say if you're interested in any kind of relationship, don't go anywhere near Luke.
Yeah.
No, not the right person.
Lesson of the week.
Let's talk about sugar daddies.
Ooh.
And sugar babies, as they are termed.
I definitely signed up to a sugar daddy website.
Really?
Yeah. Ooh. This was probably like 2 years ago I did. I was struggling financially.
Yeah.
Because I had a friend sign up and they were just like, oh my God, I actually found one. And I was just like, no, you did not. And just like, yes, I did. And so like he would take him on shopping trips and stuff and like just help him like with his bills and his rent. But they didn't have any sexual relations whatsoever. It was more like a platonic, it's nice to just have someone there. And I was just like, yeah, hell yeah, I'll sign up. Literally was signed up for like 2 months. I was like, okay, I'm not getting any grabs here.
Aww,
this is not happening. This sucks.
I pay you to come for coffee with me. So for the context of this conversation, I mean, a lot of different people have different ideas of what a sugar daddy is. For the context of this, it's not necessarily just a relationship where one person is more financially better off than the other person. It's more where there is an arrangement for meeting up and receiving either gifts or money for hanging out, sometimes with sexual bonuses, but also sometimes, like you said, is just purely hanging out, going to the movies, going out for dinner. Yeah.
Well, I think the idea of the gay sugar daddy that wants to like shower you in gifts but not
the pretty woman
choke you in the woods is like the Moby Dick of the gay community. Yeah. We all start off pretty poor and out of the closet thinking, oh yeah, I'll just get a sugar daddy. I never have. I think I'm too transparent in my wants and needs that it never quite worked out for me. But I do remember when I first moved to Melbourne and got a group of gay male friends who were living quite fabulously, and I was shit poor and eating meagering noodles. And a few of them actually would talk about their boyfriends who lived interstate and were in their 60s. It was a very unspoken sugar daddy baby relationship. They were living. They were like, yeah, we have sex maybe once a month.
Mm.
They visit from Darwin or whatever, and they send me like part of their paycheck every fortnight.
Amazing. Wow.
And these people had like bought properties and stuff. I was like 18. Yeah. I was like, holy shit, this is why gay people have so much nice stuff. They do it this way. But then I realized that's not the case.
No.
And it's
no.
It pisses me off, you know, when people say, oh, I'm so broke, maybe I'll just like sell my body for a bit. Like they make light of it or be like, oh, I'll just get a sugar daddy and they'll pay for everything. But it's actually quite tough, I think, to find someone and make it work. And also on a side note, sex work is not that easy option to take. It's
not for everybody.
No.
Although I think there is a difference between a sex worker and a sugar daddy relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I just hate that.
Both
flipping.
Are fine. It's just, you're right. It's not just I might as well just do this kind of a decision.
Yeah.
I've definitely been in relationships where there has been a large gap, and both ways as well, where, you know, when I was younger, I was in a relationship with somebody who was earning substantially more than me, and I have since been in relationships where I was earning substantially more than the other person.
Yeah.
But that was never the basis of the relationship. It was just that we happened to be in a relationship and that was the situation. And so naturally the person earning more was paying for stuff, but it was never that's why it's happening, which I think is sort of the crux of a sugar sex relationship I've discovered. I'm such an expert on this now.
I was in a relationship once where I was unemployed for an amount of time due to an unfortunate fire incident where I did become dependent on my partner. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was totally unspoken. And that was one of the most uncomfortable relationships I've ever been in.
Was there a power sort of struggle?
After a while, it really demoralized me and took away a lot of my power or my sense of self-worth, which is not very high to begin with. Yeah, I think being really open about it and having that kind of agreement in place, I think that's great. If you can find that and that works for you, amazing. The idea of getting back into that scenario where it's unspoken and it's more this kind of dynamic that you have and a power play between two people makes me really spooked out.
Yeah, it was when I was reading about it, it was interesting, all the interviews with sugar babies, both in gay relationships and also in heterosexual relationships. And there is also when it's an older woman and a younger man, because we don't call it a sugar mama, we call it a cougar, which is sort of, there's some very sexist terms when you look at it that way. Like if it's a man doing it, then he's powerful and stuff. But when it's a woman doing it, she's a predator. It's a weird. Anyway. But it was interesting reading all these interviews with the sugar babies. They said often that the reason that it will end is because the person with the money is becoming too controlling and too manipulative and that sort of thing. And it's because they feel like they've gotten to a point where they've invested so much money, they should have more and more control over the person they're investing money
into. Sort of
into.
Like the person is their property, in a sense. Yeah.
And you see it happen. I remember when I started working again in that relationship and started getting some of my own money, it became immediately clear that that was not my money to spend still. You know, where was I spending it? What was I spending it on?
Yeah, right. I mean, fucking good on people that want to do it. It's just never been something that I've been comfortable to give a shot. I have had some friends that have done it. Well, not, I mean, I'm 32 now and most of my friends are around about my age, so no one's probably young enough to do it now. But when I was younger, I definitely had friends that were sugar babies and were loving it.
Regular daddies, I'm all for that.
Daddy
in general.
But the sugar element.
Yeah, when you're going out for the specific arrangement of a transactional sort of agreement.
I find it really interesting, like, why sugar daddies want to go into that sort of relationship. They've had a lot of relationship breakdowns in the past.
Yeah, right.
And they still want that companionship, but without the whole complexity of an actual relationship where they can just be like, hey, I'm in town, come and spend time with me. And then when they're done with the person, they're just like, okay, you can go away now.
Like, and do you think it's because they've got like very busy lives and stuff that they don't have time to invest emotionally?
Absolutely.
I always used to get sad when you'd genuinely talk to, say, an older man on an app, say like Grindr or whatever, and they obviously had been contacted so many times, they'd send a disclaimer at the beginning of the conversation.
Or even have it in the profile,
they're not going to pay you to
money,
spend time with them. And having to talk to those people and be like, no, I just want to talk to you and get to know you.
Yeah, I noticed when I was in Bali last time, the amount of both local people who has had on their profile not money boy or not looking for sugar daddy or anything like that. Crazy the amount of,
really?
But also the amount of like white expats there that had not a sugar daddy, not looking to pay or anything like that was really interesting as well. It's obviously a far more regular thing in that culture.
It's a cultural thing. Mm. Even my family in the Philippines are like, you could just do that, you know? Like if I talk to them. Yeah. All the time, I'd talk to them about what I was doing and be like, oh, work's pretty shit, you know, I'm doing accounting work. And they'd be like, you could just become a ladyboy, they'd say a lot. Just a ladyboy, better money, less work.
And it's like, the same thing in their mind,
And it was interesting for them. Yeah. They would be proud if I went down that pathway as well. They were just like, you can do that. That's what your cousins have done. You know, you can support the family that way. Yeah, I think it's the idea that I'm a useless gay and I'm not putting my talent, body.
You're managing a mental health practice. I mean, you're not doing nothing.
I think it's just a cultural thing. It is much bigger, I think, in places like the Philippines and Bali. But not to say that it's not socially ingrained in our minds here too.
It's probably socially more so in the gay male community than it is in the heterosexual community as well.
gold diggers, eh?
Mm.
Oh, is that what diggers. Is that? Do they still?
I don't know. Is that even a term that you still use?
Term?
I don't know. I'm not cool. Why are you looking at me?
Because you're nearly at the sugar daddy stage.
Oh, yeah, but not the sugar daddy bank account.
I always love seeing couples out in public that are very clearly a huge age gap.
Oh, are they dating or is it his dad?
Are you actually dating? Is that your parent or is that your sugar daddy?
Yeah.
It always runs through my head and I'm just like, I need to stop thinking these things. They could just be in a really lovely relationship.
I think sometimes there is really, like, yeah, there's definitely cute couples. Yeah. Like at my trivia night, there's a couple of really cute couples where there is a large age gap, but it's definitely not like a financial thing or anything like that. It's just that they are, you know, a guy that's into older guys and an older guy that's into younger guys has met and they fell in love. And some of them have much healthier and longer relationships than a lot of the other gay couples that I know.
When I was first exploring my sexuality online, I frequented a lot of video game forums and message boards just to like talk to people and find out where I fit in the community. But I remember one of the first things that opened my eyes, being still in the closet and like 16 or whatever, or 15 in Adelaide, was a thread on this internet message board where people posted their partners. And there was one guy that I used to chat to a bit on there, and he posted his partner. And it was a daddy. It was like a 70-year-old man and he was in his 20s. I remember talking to him and being like, oh, is this a sugar daddy relationship or arrangement? And he was like, no, that's just what I'm into. All of my partners have been like 60 plus.
Right.
There's no financial transactions going on here. And I realize being queer and in the LGBT community, your relationships are less informed by heteronormative standards.
Yeah. True. That's a really good point, actually. Yeah.
That I was like, oh, cool, this is totally fine. And this guy likes that. And that's what he's done. And he's so open about it. And it's like water off a duck's back. I can find what I'm into.
Have you guys ever been with someone who is 60 plus?
Not on purpose.
How not on purpose?
You know, the old no lights, no pics
thing,
you know. But
do you mean physically or dating?
Like for sex. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think some of the best sex I've ever had is with men who were 60 plus.
Yeah, right.
Oh, really?
Without a doubt. Because like...
practice makes perfect.
Well, that's it. They've had a lot of practice and also like they're not anxious about having sex with someone and they're like so comfortable and just like relaxed most of the time that I've been with them. And I'm just like, this is nice.
One time I had to help my dad order... One time I had to help my dad order Viagra online.
Oh, God.
Because he couldn't... He's 77.
Okay.
He couldn't complete the online checkout.
Yeah.
He was buying it online. He has like a... Oh, he's going to kill me. He invited me to his little den because he said his computer... His computer was playing up and he'd reshaped the window so it was just like the entry fields of the order form and I couldn't see. And I was like, well, first thing is you've fucked up this window. You got to maximize it. And he was, buying Viagra online. So to do my usual important topic of the episode, high horse segment, I did want to talk about something else that probably does also require a content warning, because I work in mental health. I do a lot of reading about mental health as well, and I'm really interested in the visibility of issues that are predominantly seen as heteronormative, but exist within our community. And one that doesn't get talked about very often or doesn't have a huge amount of support is DV, or domestic violence and abuse, especially within male-to-male relationships or really LGBT relationships in general. 44% of lesbians and 61% of bisexual women have experienced rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner.
Wow.
26% of gay men and 37% of bisexual men have experienced rape, physical violence, or stalking. The rates for trans individuals is even higher than that. So it's definitely something that exists in our community.
Yeah.
We provide support at my work and we have resources and links that we send to people. But something I notice about them, they're all extremely heterosexual.
Yeah.
The information out there are always framed in a heteronormative structure. It's a man and a woman.
Like all the ads that you see on TV,
it's like a,
directed towards
married
domestic
couple
violence.
With kids,
it's you never see anyone who's LGBT in that sense whatsoever.
It's even a touchy topic for heterosexual men who are victims of domestic abuse and what little there is out there for them, that it really poses the question, what do we have or where do we go and what support can we get? It's happening. It's happening a lot in our community. I've been a part of a number of abusive relationships, emotionally, physical, and I feel like it's common in our community because I've always felt there's a bit of an emotional stunting that happens with LGBT people.
Yeah.
We can often find that we've sectioned off parts of ourselves emotionally to survive the hell of being in the closet during our childhood and definitely our adolescence. And we end up going through those developmental phases in our 20s and our 30s or when we do come out. And then we're not reinforced with positive relationship standards through the media, through the stories that we see. We have so many negative portrayals of LGBT relationships that are fraught with drama and heartbreak and intensity. But our school and to an extent our families aren't providing us with those counterpoints of really healthy, loving relationships between two men or two women or a trans person, that it can lead to some aggression. It can lead to some unhealthy emotional bullying.
My understanding is that a lot of domestic violence comes from self-loathing in the first place, regardless of who the attacker is. And so it makes sense that people that have gone through these traumatic coming outs or, you know, being stuck in the closet for long periods of time and can harbour these sorts of feelings that do result in abusing the people that they, at least they think they love, or the people closest to them. Is that...
Absolutely. I think that plays into part of it. For me, my self-worth was so low and I had no hope in happy, long-lasting future for myself. So whenever I found myself through some happenstance in a relationship, that was the one. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's my relationship. That I'd have multiple friends say, this person is...
They're not good for you.
They're taking like, your money or they're being abusive to you in public, you know, verbally abusive in front of family and friends, etc. And I'd stay. I'd stay. Because it wasn't enforced to me that I had options or that that was an unhealthy relationship to be in and that I could just leave.
Yeah.
Or that I could report that even. The really scary thing in these reports is how hesitant people in the LGBT community are to even report cases of domestic violence due to fear of repercussions from first call responders and that homophobia that they may or may not experience, or the lack of understanding that a health professional may have of the intricacies of being an LGBT person.
Yeah.
One good thing is reading about what's called the Rainbow Tick initiative for law enforcement, and I think it can apply to health services and allied health professionals as well, which is having a knowledge of what, say, domestic abuse is, or in a mental health capacity, what depression is or bipolar, but then also having a innate knowledge of what it is to be an LGBT individual and how those two things can create something unique that you can't just go off a textbook. It doesn't take into account the intricacies of being in the closet for, let's say, 10 years or the amount of self-loathing that you might have or the sense of persecution that you may feel on a daily basis by society. Yes, that is a textbook case of domestic abuse, but we also have a history that is unique to every LGBT individual of how they've been persecuted or what emotional baggage that they may have, because it hasn't been an easy ride for a lot of us. The playground for that is often our relationships. That's where all the nasty stuff can start to grow and fester.
And I mean, I guess I hope going forward, you know, as the society is becoming more accepting and stuff, people's coming out stories and people's childhoods aren't going to be as traumatic and we are going to find lower rates of this going forward in the future. But unfortunately for all the people that have already gone through that, you know, we need to do something for those people. I'm very excited about the Daniel Andrews government investing a lot of money into domestic violence support services. Yes. I mean, I don't know what the split of that is between heterosexual and LGBTI people, but I know that they are very progressive on LGBTI issues. also the new Pride Centre in St Kilda will have services for people in the community that will address domestic violence issues and that sort of thing, which is, you know, some great steps, but I think this is a much bigger issue that I haven't really heard a lot of people talking about. But hearing those statistics, obviously we do need to be having a much bigger conversation about it.
For me personally, like, I've not had any physical abusive relationships, but a lot more mental sort of abusive relationships, where before Josh, this particular person wasn't very mentally healthy, grew up in a household where domestic abuse was a common thing and alcohol abuse was a very common thing as well. And being a young 20-year-old, not really knowing how to support that person was really hard.
Yeah, right.
Unfortunately, they sort of unleashed that onto me and I didn't really know how to deal with it or understood the fact that that wasn't an okay thing for that person to do. And it was a lot of picking on me for the way that I act and the way that I dressed and my body shape and putting on weight. And it was mentally draining. And it took me a very long time to sort of trust another person intimately again. And I think it wasn't until I had a friend pull me up one day and they were just like, why haven't you come to see any of us? I'm just like, oh, well, this person doesn't really like hanging out with people. They're uncomfortable. And every time it's I bring them around, like, it ended up being a very controlling relationship where it was like, you can only see these people and you can only do these certain things. And we will have sex when I say we have sex. It was our money is my money. And like, I will control where we spend things. And I was happy that those friends stepped forward and just like, even the way he treats you in front of us, like, we can tell that this isn't right. The way he speaks to you is very demeaning and he puts you down in front of all of us. And we don't understand why you put up with it. And it wasn't until that moment that I realized, I was like, shit, I'm in an abusive relationship and I didn't realize it at all. And so going forward after that relationship ended, I was just like, I'm good. I will be by myself. I'm not happy to share myself with anyone else for a very long time.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. You also raise a really good point where it's also can be a hereditary thing as well.
Well, yeah.
Domestic violence, if you know someone has grown up in an environment where they've seen that, it's almost contagious. You know, you can catch it and stuff.
Yeah. It also perpetuates itself if you see services not responding or like not being effective in terms of helping your parents get out of an abusive relationship, you're less likely to engage in seeking services when you were in an abusive relationship or even to spot the signs. Or
you may think that you can get, if you become somebody that is actively abusive, you might think, I can get away with it because my dad did or my uncle did whatever, you know.
I think it's important to remember that there are different types of abusive relationships too. There's a wheel, you can Google it as well, which breaks down that there's verbal abuse and then there is a financial abuse.
Which is a big one.
And then there's physical abuse. And I think something that can also be more prevalent in the gay male community is a hypersexualization in our relationships, which can lead to blurred lines. I've been in, you know, I think anyone listening to the show knows I like a bit of rough and tumble, but I have found myself in situations where the lines there have become really blurred, which doubles back into consent, and then it doubles back into mental health as well, where there are a lot of different types of abuse and there needs to be conversations had about the effects of it, what we can do.
And being able to identify it when you're in it.
Yeah, and it helps people identify it. I've been, like hearing you tell that story, I've been on the other side of that relationship where I had a long period where I hadn't sought mental health assistance because I didn't know those services existed at the time and I didn't know that was a thing. So I had a lot of social anxiety. I had really low self-esteem. I took that all out on my partner because I didn't have a support and that person became my mental health support.
Yeah,
they just were my caretaker. I had another relationship where the guy would swap my drinks while I was out with friends because he didn't like the person that I was when I drank. So I'd be talking and I'd turn around and suddenly my wine was gone and there was...
You have a lemonade or something.
A lemonade there instead. Yeah. And my friends would watch it.
What?
And they would come to me afterwards and be like, you know, this guy's like called you a piece of shit. four or five times and you've just laughed at it, that they were really the frontline response team. They tell you the signs. Even working in mental health, we always say a lot of the times your personal relationships, your friends, will be the strongest and most important lifeline that you have out of these sort of tricky situations. But the professional support is definitely available, and there is a lot of growth in specialized help for LGBT individuals. The more that we share these experiences, the more data we have to help further generations not get into these sort of scenarios in the first place. What a barrel of laughs that was.
Woo! It's been an intense episode, but we got through a lot of stuff, so thanks for sticking with us.
The light and the dark.
We are, yes.
The highs and the lows.
We're definitely going for a wine after this recording.
That is the gaze of revolt.
Exactly. And don't forget to send in your questions, either mental or physical, to us via DMs for Dr. George, who will be joining us in a few episodes. Weeks.
Yeah. Very exciting.
And if you've got a review, give it to us. We love reviews. Rate and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, but five stars on the old Apple Podcasts.
Yes, that feels lovely.
Goes a long way.
We got featured for Mardi Gras on Apple Podcasts.
Very exciting. Yeah, we did. That was great.
So we were up there with What's the Tea?
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of other
wonderful podcasts. Prolific. So thanks for everyone for helping out with that. Damn. We love you all, and we'll see you next week.
Bye!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.